Chris Dorner, Badge of Dishonor. Episode 3, Lessons Learned. After a 10-day manhunt, rogue cop Christopher Dorner is cornered in a cabin in the popular resort community of Big Bear, California.
Christopher Dorner has said that he will not be taken into custody alive.
A shootout with law enforcement would leave another deputy dead.
A brief exchange of gunfire occurred.
Law enforcement used special gas canisters to try and remove Dorner and end the siege.
Looks like the house is on fire there,
yes.
Kevin.
Yeah, the house was lit on fire.
With the cabin in flames and law enforcement closing in, a coroner's report found Chris Dorner put a gun to his own head.
We believe that Chris Dorner, the fugitive that's been on the run for about a week, who's gone on a murderous rampage, has met his fate inside this cabin.
First came the manifesto. Then the manhunt. Now, the lessons learned. From the future of the LAPD to the future covering these types of news stories, here are reporters Hal Eisner, Laura Diaz, Bill Schumann, Managing Editor Pete Wilgorin, and Dr. Carol Lieberman. This is Chris Dorner, Badge of Dishonor, Episode 3, Lessons Learned.
Any organization that disciplines its employees is going to have people that feel that they were unfairly judged or unfairly penalized for their actions, you know, and I recognize that. You're never going to eliminate that, just as, that is the nature of human beings, to put off blame. However, that doesn't change the fact that you have to make sure your system works.
Talk about sort of some final thoughts and takeaways.
Well, obviously, we have to cover the story as it's unfolding. It's impacting all of Southern California. My question is, after the fact, how do we refer to these suspects, and not just the Dorner case, but in mass shooting cases and other horrific crimes? And by publicizing their actions and their quote-unquote manifestos, do we then encourage the next person? It's not the first time that question's been raised, but there's no easy answers to it. But I just have real reservations about how much attention you pay to the worst of us.
But in a case like this, isn't it compounded by the fact that everybody's looking for this guy? And every person that's watching television, reading a paper, listening to the radio, is another pair of eyes, is another person in the army of those trying to help authorities find this killer. Isn't that sort of the case?
Dorner is to be considered armed and extremely dangerous. Christopher Jordan Dorner is described as a male African-American, approximately 6 foot tall, 270 pounds. He's 33 years of age. He has black hair and brown eyes. Dorner's vehicle is described as a late model Nissan Titan pickup. We ask that anyone who sees him or this vehicle should not approach or attempt to contact him, but immediately call 911 and notify law enforcement authorities.
Well, if you recall at the time, I remember going to put gas in the car and people would literally stop me and say, have they seen him? Are they any closer to capturing him? It truly did grab the attention of every, you know, most citizens, I think, in Southern California were aware of it. I was just saying a minute ago, recall that they evacuated a store in Northridge because they thought they had a Christopher Dorner sighting. They thought that he had been sighted in Tijuana. I mean, this was an international manhunt that absolutely fixated media around the world. And, you know, by extension, just any regular person could have been caught in the crossfire.
Every police officer, every deputy sheriff we talked to tonight, they all agree with $1 million reward on his head, you can expect more incidents like this one here at Lowe's tonight. You can just expect more of them.
Well, not only fixated media, but involved the media, right? You had kind of the perfect storm, I hate to say it, a little cliche, but a person who was targeting law enforcement, who was also mentioning and picking up by name members of the press, in addition to, the people he liked, the people he didn't like. It had everything for an unbelievable story.
Well, there's sort of two separate discussions here. One is this was a manhunt that went on for several days, so obviously we're going to be covering that. But then the questions are really after the fact. You risk glorifying the actions of a madman by by repeating it, by talking about his name, by talking about his manifesto, by analyzing it. And then again, the question is, does that encourage the next person seeking fame? I mean, he published this manifesto on Facebook initially, I believe, right?
Yes.
So it's this whole question about social media and the responsibility of social media platforms. Is, you know, is everything fair game? And then there's not a right or wrong answer. There's not, it's not an easy question to answer.
He graduated from the police academy back in 2006. Now, after that, he spent 13 months on a military deployment. After returning from his deployment in 2007, he was assigned to the Harbor Division of the LAPD. During that time, he was charged by his own department for making false statements to detectives investigating a claim he made against a female police sergeant. He claimed she kicked a man outside a hotel during an arrest. She denied it. He was fired.
It is true that whether you glorify or whether you mention name and talk about a school shooter, for example, let's say Nicholas Cruz from Parkland, or a terrorist, let's say the New Zealand terrorist, or Christopher Dorner after he was dead, you know, it does to some extent attract people who want that same kind of international level of attention to think, huh, well, if I do something like that, you know, look, I'll be on every television station, radio station, all over the media. And I want that because I feel so like nothing. I'm so helpless. I don't really count in this world. So, yes. But on the other hand, you know, I think of it like Voldemort from J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter, that Voldemort was called he who must not be named. Now, just not by naming him, it didn't make him any less dangerous, or not naming him. It didn't make him any less dangerous. And really, you know, it's better to name these people and to talk about the attacks and to talk about what they did so that we can analyze it and understand it. And hopefully that part of the story will get out as well, not just attracting people to who want that attention, but also to understand why people do these kinds of things.
As the suspect in the shooting deaths of a Cal State Fullerton basketball coach, Monica Kwan, and her fiancé, Keith Lawrence, their bodies, you may recall, were found in Lawrence's car Sunday night on the top floor of their Irvine condo complex parking garage. Now, according to a rambling, violent, multi-page manifesto left by Dorner, the former Navy Reserve officer was represented by Kwan's father in an LAPD review hearing, which resulted in his being fired from the LAPD in 2008.
We're in the business of who, what, when, where, why, and how, and who is a big part of that.
No, we're in the business of attracting eyeballs to advertisers.
Well, that is one perspective, but we are in the business of who, what, when, where, why, and how, and you don't leave out the who. And I also think that when we learn about the who and we understand who the who is, we better understand who these people might be in the future.
Exactly.
I think it's an important piece of the puzzle.
That's not as much our job as it is for a law enforcement job.
We're the communicators. It is law enforcement's job.
But I don't know that there were any red flags that they could have known that Christopher Dorner was going to go on this rampage if he was dismissed.
Well, that's your question about what have we learned from this about trying to prevent it in the future. And I don't know if there is any
I don't know if there's a conclusive answer to that. I think I mentioned to you earlier that Chief Beck expressed reservations about sort of chipping back the wound for those families who had lost loved ones. And he specifically looked at the camera and said that he hoped that it didn't cause more pain to Randy Kwan's family, because obviously they're friends, they go way back.
Chief Charlie Beck, new interview 2019.
I am immensely saddened by what they went through and are going through. You know, the Crane family, the McKay family, the Lawrence family and the Kwan family, they have suffered so much. And, you know, this will undoubtedly, if they see this will just reignite that suffering. And I apologize for that. You know, I don't know what I could have done better or different, but I wish I was able to have ended this before they had to suffer that kind of pain.
But it was a weight that he still carries
with him to this
day. Which is kind of
Dorner's point. Sorry for interrupting. That was kind of Dorner's point, that Kwan was friends with Beck. So Dorner's point was that Kwan's loyalties were to the LAPD and not to him, which is kind of the root of the whole controversy.
That was one of the things that were put forth in the manifesto, that he didn't feel he was given a fair shake. But it also sounds as though at a very young age, Christopher Dorner didn't think he was getting a fair shake. This was not something that emerged during his time on the LAPD. Wouldn't you say that, Doctor?
Well, yes, and I think what we can learn from this is that particularly now at a time when there are more kids dying by bullying, either suicide or, the little girl just recently who was pushed in a fight and who was killed. So I think that this is really still very, very important to take from this, that these little things that we, may not pay enough attention to can make Christopher Dorner's later on, between the bullying, and there were signs. I mean, it also tells us not only to look at things really carefully, all these traumas in childhood, but to also operate organizations in a fairer kind of way, to not have racism or bullyism in organizations.
I don't discount the effect that Dorner's manifesto has had on the reputation of the Los Angeles Police Department. It needs to be addressed. We are only as good as the public thinks we are.
I think the legacy of this case, the Chris Dorner case, in addition to the victims lost, who we've talked about, and I think you're right, we can't forget, is that this is still a city that's had a lot of painful points in its past. And right or wrong, some of the things that is brought up in Dorner's manifesto are things that people still feel need to be addressed when you're talking about racism in the city and problems within big institutions like the LAPD. And that maybe if there's one good thing to come out of that story, maybe it is that people are still talking about it, or that people feel like things can be made better or still need to be addressed.
There's a big problem in law enforcement in Southern California where officers report wrongdoing and they get retaliated against. If you report a use of force, a beating, a shooting, and you don't follow the company line, some kind of a complaint often will wind up against you.
But aren't these really society's woes? Racism,
for sure.
Sexism, all of the isms, right? And you look at the LAPD, 8,000 people in that department. It is truly like a city, almost a small city. And today we know that there is an attempt, certainly, to try to bring the sunlight in and look at things in a fair way. It's a far cry from the Daryl Gates regime today, 2019. Maybe some people of color would not necessarily agree with that, or the LGBT community. But for those of us who've been around a long time, I mean, Phil, can you see a difference in the way policing takes place today with community-based policing? I certainly can.
Oh, absolutely. It's like night and day, but it doesn't mean that they're perfect, which we all understand. But sure, I mean, the relationship between the community and the LAPD is much better than it was a generation ago.
Chief Charlie Beck, new interview 2019.
That the people that you select to do this job, you know, have to pass the highest level of scrutiny that's possible, which Dorner did. Unfortunately, but even then, you still have to make sure, that you get the right people. I think that's the takeaway is that this job can be very difficult if it falls into the wrong hands. There's a lot of authority, a lot of capability, and a lot of potential for evil if handled the wrong way.
The other question, let me ask Peter. I mean, as a managing editor here and someone who's responsible for our news coverage, I'm sure you and our news directors and our other bosses have that discussion about how much do we cover an event, whether it's this, whether it's a car chase, whether it's a school shooting, and what our responsibility is.
Those discussions happen all the time, and a lot of times it's just in my head on the ride to and from work. I mean, honestly, I'll sit there and think about the day, what we've covered, or think about what may happen, and really think about how much is too much. you know, when we need to pull back on things. And sometimes it's big stories like Dorner. Sometimes it's, you know, it's other shooting incidents. And I'll give you an example from our not too distant past, Phil. When we had the massacre in Las Vegas, there was instant cell phone video from everyone that had caught this happening, right? This guy opens fire from the Mandalay Bay, and you hear it, and you see people run, and right away you're watching carnage. And we showed that on our air in the context of the story the first day.
Keep your head down, go! Keep your head down, go!
And by the second day, I really got a sense of, you know what, this is kind of gratuitous now. This is no longer in the context of the story. And we put out a note to people in the newsroom here. We want to use this just sparingly now. Remember, every time you're showing this video, you're showing people who are getting killed by someone. And we can't ever forget that. So I think those conversations happen a lot in the newsroom, you know, between the managers and the reporters. I know you and I have talked about it before, and pretty much every story. And it's subjective. It's a judgment call. And, it, you know, sometimes those things change as something progresses. You know, could I do the Christopher Dorner story over again? I'd be very hesitant about the position we had our reporter in up on Big Bear, hiding under a car, talking to us on a live phone interview. That, you know, could have been tragic for him, and it was tragic for a sheriff's detective. And Dorner ended up getting killed as a result of all of this. I'm not sure that our reporter should have been in that situation. He ended up there. So I think, you know, for me, lessons learned on that, too.
Another recent situation was Santa Anita horse racing. We had a camera there when horse number 22 had to be put to sleep. We had footage. We showed it to make the point that this happened and the ramifications from it. But I recall Pete in the newsroom making it very clear there was a limit to how much we were going to show. And there was a point where he said, we're not going to show anymore.
Yeah, and you know what? I think
so we have to do what we do and stand by it.
Well, you started
the. Some of the, they don't know what the raw footage looks like often, so we know what the edited version looks like. And you know, life can be tough. Let's not kid ourselves. There are things that happen all the time that are difficult to watch and speak about, and
sure.
And this particular chapter of history is a dark moment in LA history, and. You know, I wrestle with the same issues that you do. How much is too much? Should we spend this much time on it? But I know as a journalist, and I've covered so many stories in Southern California, it was a story that gripped me. I remember that I would go to sleep at night, and I would have an iPad and two iPhones in bed with me because I didn't want to wake up in the middle of the night and not be able to check multiple sources. That's how kind of obsessive I was about the story. I know I'm not different than anybody else in the news media. I'm not suggesting that I am. So you can imagine if you are the investigators, what they're living with 24/7, 36 hours straight without any sleep, sleeping a couple of hours, and then going at it again, that was the level of fear. And that was the simultaneous investigation and also being the parties that are hunted. It is a major news story in L.A.
Chief Charlie Beck, new interview 2019.
Well, the first couple of days were absolutely wild because, you know, we had the incident with the Riverside PD officers, you know, we had the shooting with LAPD officers. We were trying to run Dorner to ground and you know, that was not going well at the time. You know, we were unable to pin down his location. So we were not only working to keep our people safe, but we're working in the investigative side to see if we could locate him, you know, through our traditional means, you know, through his phone and through, you know, offering a reward and, you know, all the many things that we did to try to flesh him out. And, you know, eventually that happened. but it took way longer than anybody wanted.
I would argue, I think you're right, Phil. You know, sometimes the media love it or hate it. There's people on both sides of that coin. I get it. This is the business we've made our livelihoods on. I think sometimes you make the judgments as these situations unfold. The Dorner case was certainly one of them. And I can point, you know, at the end of the day, we're a business where we're about getting information out to the viewers. And here in L.A., we're about telling the stories of Los Angeles. And for that 10 days, this was the story of Los Angeles. So, you know, I'm not sure how we could have covered it differently. When you talk about some of these moments that are, you know, indelible, or how much is too much, I think another thing in the legacy of this city that you can look back to is the video of Rodney King. And probably the first example of video.
Like citizen journalism.
Having mm-hmm. such a compelling impact. And obviously everything we do nowadays is video. It's security video. It's some sort of social media video. This was one person's video that, had it not existed...
George Holliday changed the world.
When I looked out of my window, there was an individual spread-eagled on the car that had been stopped right across the street from my apartment.
Then they struck me across the face real hard with a billy club. After that, they continued to pound on me.
He did.
Mm-hmm. He did.
You wouldn't know the name Rodney King without that piece of video. So I think that's the, you know, and that video has kind of gone down in infamy in Los Angeles, but it tells a very important story, and it also opened up a very important and different chapter in journalism and how we cover it, I think.
Yeah, we're in a tough business in a huge metropolis. And like Laura said, you know, we don't report on the successful plane landings. You know, most of the news is unfortunately bad news. And what's the fascinating, like, moral dilemma and discussion is that, you know, we try to do what we do and hold to journalistic standards and have a sense of responsibility of being members of the community and being tasteful and respectful. But then we have to also wonder, what's our competition doing? Because we're in a competitive business.
I think you make some really good points. I mean, I do think that in 2019, journalism is much different than in the decades past, especially going back into 60s, 70s, 80s, when we didn't have the cell phones that we have. You know, smartphones changed everything, too. But I think, you know, I think the bottom line is you just have to cover the story. And what that story covers, that's our job. And if we're going to cave to the notion that, well, the public doesn't want to know a guy's name, we're not going to say the guy's name, I think we're holding back facts. And I don't think that's our job to censor ourselves. And I also think this. I also think that in a case like the Dorner case, this was so unusual. This was so incredibly captivating for everybody in this community, all the way down into Mexico. It was international, as Laura says, that people, they wanted to know what was going on. They wanted to know if they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. People wanted to know what was happening, and it was our responsibility, I think, to communicate whatever we could to let people know what was happening so they weren't in the dark. So I don't know. I mean, this is a great discussion about journalism the way it is now, and I think we could talk for a long time about that. But as it applies to the Dorner case, I think that – and remember, that was quite a few years ago.
Six years ago.
Yeah, we've changed since then, even in 6 years. But, you know, I think looking back, I don't know how we would change what we did. You know, I think that we took information as we could get information. It was very hard to get information. And then we tried to disseminate that back out. And in many cases, it was filtered already before we ever got it through law enforcement. And I don't think they always, you know, they held back stuff because they weren't even sure themselves what they were dealing with.
We believe this individual may be watching TV or may have some access to media, so I don't want to tip our hand as to what we're sending out there. To that end, we've also asked the media that have airships in the area to not have your air units show any live broadcasting close-ups of what our SWAT officers, with the San Bernardino SWAT officers, are doing up in that area. The reason for that is, obviously, it'll put our officers at an extreme tactical disadvantage if the suspect knows what our folks are doing.
Well, some of it they didn't even know until after Dorner was dead. For instance, I said earlier that one of the things they discovered was that people had been stalked. So he had specific targets in mind. Two of those were the young people who lost their lives, Monica Kwan and her fiance. And then Chief Beck's father was being stalked.
But the important thing to sort of look back on and not forget is at that point in time, it wasn't until afterwards that we knew that the targets were people related to police officers. At that point, we didn't even know if it was just serial killings of anybody.
No, it was in the manifesto. He said, I never had a family, and so he was going to hurt them where it hurt the most.
Well, that's what he said, but we still didn't know him that well at that point. So it could have been that he said one thing and did another, because he often said one thing and did another, right? He was a guy who was proud of having the badge, and then he dishonored the badge.
Well, I think that over the years we've seen what's known as the blue line. It's been well publicized in the media and in the cinema that police protect their own. But nothing could be further from the truth when you've got a guy like this who has struck out against his own former brothers because he felt like he got a raw deal. You know what? A lot of cops get raw deals. A lot of citizens get raw deals, but we handle it. We deal with it. We get on with life. We don't go killing innocent kids, and we don't kill cops as we pull up to them and just murder them.
Well, I think whether it's Dorner or any kind of incident today, any kind of violent or terrorist kind of incident today, that we really do, or any kind of subject, I think we do a disservice to people to not tell the truth to the extent that we can. I mean, not that doesn't mean showing gratuitous violence, but at the same time, you know, the idea of hiding something, it's in this dark that all these kinds of things can take place. I think it's much more important to get people to understand who these people are, why they do what they do, so that people can apply that to their own life, think about that in their own life, and try to prevent these kinds of things happening. Even the idea of just how important, I think one of the Dorner lessons is that how important lying is, that a lie, you know, feeling that you are being betrayed or that people are believing a lie about you, that it's not just Dorner that has a strong impact on. It drives people crazy if they think that they know the truth and the rest of the world is insisting that it's something else.
So here's some of what he writes in his manifesto. Quote, now the department has not changed since the Rampart and Rodney King days. The attacks will stop when the department states the truth about my innocence publicly. I want my name back, period. He adds, unfortunately, I will not be alive to see my name cleared. That's what this is about, my name.
This month is the 20th anniversary of Columbine. You know, you hear the name Columbine and it just brings all sorts of images right to the forefront. Is the genie out of the bottle? I mean, kind of a question for everyone now. You know, the whole idea of, do we glorify people when we report this type of thing? If we made a decision to stop reporting this type of thing tomorrow, would this type of thing stop? Or is it too late for that?
It wouldn't stop. It's too late. There are too many other factors that are perpetrating it. You know, they're making it continue. It's weighing the two things. I mean, yes, there might be some people who would think, oh, well, damn, I'm not going to get my name in the paper. But it's much more important to teach other people or communicate with other people about what's really going on.
What do you think, Phil?
I'd like to try it as an experiment. Let's do it for a year and see what happens. But it's, you know, it has to be part of a multi-pronged approach. I mean, You talk about violent video games. You talk about movies. You talk about TV shows. I mean, you drive through Southern California or any city, you see a billboard for the latest action movie. What does it show? It shows somebody brandishing weapons. I mean, if you try to call up a movie studio and say, I'm doing a story about the connection between violence in your movies and violence in society, I'd like to talk to your producers about that. They're like, there's no way that's going to happen. So it's a question about social media. It's a question about gun control. It's a question about, you know, how people are brought up.
It's also a question about mental health.
Mental health resources. I mean, what's available to help people who are struggling. So the news media and news coverage of it is just one part of a very complex issue.
There's a standoff and a blockade with a suspect, possibly Chris Dorner.
Believed to be in a cabin there, not far from that white Dodge truck.
And now, if they do have him as a barricaded subject, eventually they're going to have to go in, and that's going to be a bad ending to this nightmare.
Well, to bring it back to Dorner, what do we have? We have our reputation, we have our name, we have our integrity, right? So when you feel that that's violated, it provokes it provokes a response. And that's what we saw in this case. Some more extreme than others.
I always think it's good to be able to look at a situation or a news story from all sides. I think most reporters are very honest and try to go out with not with a conceived idea in their head already about how the story is going to end. That's not our job. Our job is to present all sides of the story. So I think there is value in looking back at a case like this. And often in news, if we're criticized of anything, it's just that we do a surface report and then we move on. So the fact that we're allowed to air this story out and get a perspective from somebody who was at the center of it in Charlie Beck, I think is a unique opportunity for us, not only as a newsroom, but for our viewers to go behind closed doors. That is a special viewing situation.
Chief Charlie Beck, new interview 2019.
When you knew it was finally over and that he was dead, what were your emotions at that moment?
I was relieved, you know, and very sad. The lives he had taken and the toll, you know, of the emotional toll he has put onto to the organization I love and the city that I love, you know, weighed heavy on me. You know, I felt, how could we have hired this guy and all those things. And in the end, you realize that, you know, people are flawed, and some of them are flawed horribly.
No, I just think it's easy for people to criticize the news, but when something's happening, they're going to be watching. And that's why we do what we do, right?
There's still a
public service. I mean, people were glued to their televisions wanting to know. Can you imagine living up the mountain?
Yeah.
When I went back and read some of these accounts and I thought that I would never forget any of these facts, well, it's been 6 years and it was a 10-day event. So there was a mass amount of information and video. But one of the things was they shut down schools. They were checking people coming off the mountain car by car. And just to make sure that Dorner wasn't getting out or that he was, you know, holding somebody at gunpoint and forcing them to drive him down the mountain. The level of fear that gripped not only Southern California, but it went as far as Mexico. And, you know, we had that false sighting in Northridge. You have to take your head back to 2013 and remember just how intense it was.
Well, that's
To really grasp the story, I think.
And I remember that, too. You just got me to flashback in my head. I hadn't even thought about it in 6 years. But being up at Big Bear and the police officers stopping people to make sure that Dorner wasn't in their car. And I remember being there watching that and reporting on that. I'd forgotten about that aspect of it because there were so many other things that were so much bigger than that. The ramifications of a case like this, so complex, so tiered, so many things happening, you know, it's mind-boggling. It really is mind-boggling.
I just think it reminds us of our responsibility to put out accurate information, not to unnecessarily cause people to panic. I mean, another term that I hate that's emerged in society and then in the news media over the past several years is active shooter. And with Twitter now being like an instant response, an instant communications device, as soon as anybody hears what they think might be a gunshot somewhere, and the news media is guilty of this as well, they tweet out, you know, reports of active shooter at whatever location, which 99% of the times turns out to be premature and inaccurate. And I just think that that really is a problem.
And I think that gets back to the question of citizen journalism versus mainstream journalism. Yeah. That you know, we're journalists, we're trained. We just like Dr. Lieberman is a forensic psychiatrist, has her MD. You know, we are trained to do what we do, and we have years of experience doing it. And citizen journalism has sort of gotten this.
There's no differentiation between the New York Times and a guy in the basement in his underwear.
It's a double-edged sword. We would like to hear from them if there's something happening in their neighborhood. But we can't count on them for credibility. They're not going to corroborate their sources. They're not going to corroborate their information with, say, two or three sources like we're going to do.
I want to thank all of the law enforcement professionals who have day and night tried to bring Christopher Dorner to justice. And I also want to say something about the men and women and their families who were targeted. None of us can imagine what they've had to go through, what their children have had to go through because of the threats of Christopher Dorner. And I just want to thank the members of the Los Angeles Police Department who put their lives on the line every single day.
Footnote 2, Episode 3. Several payouts were made in connection with the Dorner investigation. The owners of that Big Bear cabin received compensation. Two innocent women shot by officers received compensation. And people who helped with tips on the whereabouts of Dorner also received compensation. As for his claim with the Board of Rights and accusations that he was wrongfully terminated, the LAPD would later rule that the board acted properly.